Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
B-Pod Studios.
Now. Sports Talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
A sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You know, how many times in life are we going to do this? It might never happen again. We should have a good time and celebrate this, and it's a wonderful thing that it brings a community together. We need more of that in today's world.
Hour number two, Zolak and Bertrand from our Town Fair Tire Studios at 98.5 The Sports Hub. Ted Johnson in for Zoe today. Patriots Parade taking place through the streets of Boston. They have not yet begun.
Nuts.
It looks insane.
Crazy. Crazy fun, man.
Remember people went nuts with the Brady number 5 shirt?
Yeah.
A couple years ago, we threw the first pitch out with the 5 on it.
Right.
Guess what number he's got on his shirt today?
7.
6.
But didn't he throw out the first pitch with the 5 after he had won 4?
He did, but now he's apparently selling a 6 shirt on TV 12.
So that's it. He's done.
He's done.
He's not striving for 7 anymore. Did you forget that he put on the 5 when he'd only won 4?
I don't know when he put the 5
on. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But I know it looks like they're selling it on TV 12.
Well, then that's just celebrating what he's got already, right? The Brady. I'm going to double check my. Double check my math on that, but I'm, yeah.
Yeah.
The 5 shirt was when he had won 4. That was back in, after the win over the Seahawks. Yeah. Spring of 2015. I think I have that right. Yeah. April of 2015. 4 trophies out on the field. Robert and John of the Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, each holding a trophy, and Brady with his number 5 shirt on because he had won 4 and was going now for 5. So today, if he wanted to keep that going, he should wear a 7 on his shirt.
It says from 6th TV12 website, from 6th round draft pick to 6 Super Bowl rings, mm-hmm. We commemorate this with a limited 6 t-shirt, $35.
I think you should just put underneath and I'm all done. 6 and I'm all done, says Tom Brady.
Maybe that's, should we read into that? Maybe this is his last year.
Yeah, it must be retiring.
No more.
That's it. I knew it. I'm hanging it up. All done.
Read the tea leaves.
6 and out. That's what it says. So, as you heard, Robert Kraft speaking over there today as they get ready for another parade. Our 98.5 The Sports Hub signs. I want to call it a K card, but it's not a
rally cards.
Rally cards. It's a rally. It's not a K card. Yeah, the rally card says never gets old. That's what it says. So, look for those signs out there today. I've already seen a picture of at least one of them down near the common. Never gets old.
Are you guys surprised that the fans continue to keep growing? The 35,000 for the rally, all the fans in Atlanta, all the people that are making their way into Boston today to see this parade. Is it because what Robert Kraft just said, which was, we don't know if this will happen again. So everybody just wants to just kind of maybe see it for the first time, or this might be the last time, so we got to get out there and we got to experience it? Or do you just think people, this is the 6th one they've gone to, and they just like to go to all of them?
I think the party grows.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. The more you win, the easier it becomes to get involved as a fan.
Yeah. That's what we're seeing here.
That's how it always happens.
Yeah, that's what we're seeing here.
You know, the more your team wins, the more fans they have. But in terms of the real fan base, I think the real fan base is obviously still there and always has been. Mm-hmm. And there are people at that parade today that have gone to every single one of these parades, that have been to all 6 of them. And so, yeah, I think you get a little bit of both. But you keep growing that crowd because you win. And I think in 2001, when it was 1.3 million people that showed up
yeah.
for that parade, I think a lot of it had to do with the real fans showing up, and then a bunch of people who are like, wow, we won something. Let's go to the parade.
Right.
It's a party.
Out of those 1.3 million people, there had to have been at least a handful who went to that parade, and it cost them, you know, at the very least, like an important job interview or an appointment or something that they really should have been at that affected them,
altered
adversely
the course of their life.
Because
hope it was worth it.
Because who knows if this will ever happen again?
Right. And look,
and now
look
we've got
now.
And
now,
yeah. Now we've done 11
five
more times.
From this team alone.
11 more times is what we've done.
It's crazy.
Sorry.
Man.
I think the
sorry
parades,
you lost your job.
The parades are a little overrated.
A little over.
They're fun. Yeah, it's great. You know, it's something that we now do, but it's
not for the players.
Little overrated, a little bit. I've been to a few. You know what my favorite one was? Not because of the crowd. I mean, in terms of like meaning, the 2001 when you guys won, that was awesome. The whole thing was great. The weather for the Celtics one in 2008. Oh, now cold. Parades in June? Those are parades.
Right. June,
Bruins sure. Stanley Cup parade? Yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful Saturday in the city of Boston. Yes, those parades. When the Bruins and Celtics win, you just have weather on your side. Like, all the windows are opened, all the bars out in front, so people are just there, and oh, that's a good take. That's a good take. And the weather's just good. Who wants to go bunt? At least today, the weather is nice, which
it's
is
very
why you're
nice
a great
out.
Crowd.
Are you kidding me? 60 degrees, I think.
It's not that blizzard from 2 years ago when Hardy had 6 feet of snow in his driveway in the street, but they were still finding ways to get the Patriots down Boylston.
Oh, sure. Everything was plowed for the sidewalks.
Yeah, exactly.
So no. People could stand there and watch a parade.
All the equipment was dedicated to the parade route.
My street was inaccessible for a week. But no, priorities. That's good.
Of course. Nick is in Brookline today. Nick.
Hey, how are you, fellas?
What's great. Up,
and totally enjoyed the annual Super Bowl, New England Patriots Super Bowl Invitational this year. It was very nice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to just say, about the defense, I think Wade Phillips... Romo said this last week, and I thought he was 100% right. He goes, when you play against Brady, what ends up happening is you're playing against two offensive coordinators because the guy is given complete free rein in audibilizing, and he's able to see things that no one sees unless you've been playing that position at the level he's been playing for that many years. So I thought, like, Wade Phillips did an incredible job that first half. And I think really the offense did wear down the Patriots offense wore down like the LA defense. So I think, you know, that I think that was a big part of it. And also I do think LA fans suck. I mean, I can't believe how lame they are. Some great points there before, but I'll listen to you guys off the line. Thanks right, so much.
Man. Appreciate it.
I mean, they rushed for 154 yards, right? I mean, Tom did maybe have his best day. But he made the plays when they needed to at the end. But that the way they were able to run the football, as effective as they were, I mean, 18 carries for Sony Michel, 5.2 per. That has an effect. It just does. And as much as we want to poo-poo a running game or the importance of a running game, in playoff games, it matters. In certain matchups, you guys, it absolutely matters. And the best way to neutralize a great pass rush is to run at them. I mean, that's what they do. They always, whenever you see them play, let's say the Texans, for instance, they always run power game, double team, J.J. Watt, wear his ass down so that he doesn't have much left in the tank to pass rush. The Chargers, divisional round, two great pass rushers, Melvin Ingram, Joey Bosa, run it down their throats so whenever it came time to pass, which it really never needed to, that those guys would be worn down. Kansas City, AFC Championship game, same thing, Beetle, same thing. Run it right at him, wear down Justin Houston, wear down D Ford, and wear down Chris Jones, and so that their pass rush at the end of the game isn't as effective. It's the same thing, same strategy in this game, and it worked.
Scott's in Weymouth. Hey, Scott.
What's up, guys?
What's up?
All right, before I get to my point, Beetle, I can't believe they got the parade together in 2 days. It still blows my mind. I thought it would be like Thursday, but that's beside the reason I called. All right, here we go. With this new championship, this two new questions arise. Obviously, the Patriots are the best dynasty in the history of the NFL. But are they the best dynasty in the history of sports? We'll get to that in a second. Another one. Obviously, Brady is the most dominant athlete in the history of football. But is he the most athlete in the history of sports? I'll give you my two answers. the most dominating dynasty sports team history of sports. Obviously, the Pats are in the conversation. What about the Montreal Canadiens of the 50s, 60s, the Celtics in their heyday, the Yankees of their heyday? Now back to Brady, the most dominant athlete the world has ever seen. Who dominates their sport alone? I put him in four categories. You have four nominees. You have Brady, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, and Pele in soccer. My answer is still Wayne Gretzky is the most dominating athlete in the history of sports.
Okay, I'm going to boil that call. I'm going to boil this call down to this. Brady's now at six. He's got a tie with Jordan. And so he's in that stratosphere of Jordan and him, right? But now it comes down to who's the most dominant athlete ever. It's not in the conversation who's the most dominant football player, who's the best quarterback. He's now entering the conversation of who's the best athlete to ever play professional sports in America.
That's the point of that call. It's no longer about just football. It's about you're putting the category with Wayne Gretzky. I put Tiger Woods in there, even though people aren't going to like him, you know, being referred to as an athlete. I mean, Roger Federer, Serena Williams, right? Anybody who has dominated and taken care of essentially their business year after year after year after year at a pace that nobody can hope to achieve or surpass, that's the category he's now in. That's the important part. Is it different? Yes, every sport is different. You know, and so you're out there with, you know, 10 other guys on the field with your unit at the same time. Everything's a little bit different. But is anybody going to eclipse this? Is anyone going to match what Tom Brady's done?
Never.
I'll
answer. No one's ever going to do that.
And you think about it.
I thought he was in that elite class after the Falcons game 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I know the championships didn't match up with Michael, but I just thought.
Super Bowls?
Yeah, come on. That's insane, Hardy.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Do they pose a threat?
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're lucky, you know, the key to life is associating with good people, people of good character, and then the real trick in management or anything else is when you have something good, try to keep it going. And if you look around the world, you look at businesses, philanthropy, sports, continuity is the hottest thing, and so that's where we spend most of our time.
You're on Zolak and Bertrand, Ted Johnson in Brazil today. Patriots parade has begun. They're rolling along.
Can I give a little update from the MBTA?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. I saw this.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Just want to get as much information out there that comes across our desk here to get out to you guys to help you. But this is a tweet from the MBTA commuter rail. It says, update, commuter rail trains are continuing to reach capacity early due to heavy parade ridership, and trains are running to running express past some stations when they are full. Extra trains are running on all lines to board as many additional passengers as possible. So yeah, it's that's what I'm hearing. Like a lot of people just
are waiting on platforms, watching their trains drive by them because they can't let you on.
And I came to work today, Beetle. I mean, I barely made it here from the South.
Yeah, I didn't make it here on time.
Yeah, well, we had good intentions, man. I was totally. Totally kind of surprised by how much traffic there was. There's a ton. Coming up Route 3, there's typically from the South Shore, there's always a lot of traffic, but today was insane. I got to the traffic was all backed up from exit 11. From exit 11 all the way up to exit like 18 or 19 is where the MBTA train station is in Braintree, Quincy.
Yeah, Quincy Adams.
And it was backed up for miles just to get onto that exit. And I was sitting there going, and it's like 9 o'clock. I'm like, there's no way they're going to get to the event in time.
MBTA has announced that it is going to be not only on the commuter rail, but across their entire system, the highest day of ridership in their history. They will have more people on the train today than any other day. And to make matters worse, a train has derailed on the D line, on the green line, line D. They've got a derailment now.
It's a bad one.
What's that?
Service suspended in both directions between Kenmore and Reservoir.
Can you imagine what it's like to be in that the command center for the MBTA You know, what's that movie with John Travolta and Denzel Washington where he's he basically is the guy in charge of all the trains?
It's
the
Taking of the Pelham 1-2-3.
Bam!
If you want to do the rhyme, then come see me.
Boom! There you go, Hardy.
What? It's a Beastie Boys lyric. What do you want?
I like that, man. Taking Pelham 1-2-3. Yeah, it was. That's the movie. Correct. And in that movie, you just. That command center in New York. I know maybe it's, but Boston's got to have something typical, similar to that, where it's just all these trains on these, on the boards and this big video kind of game room type thing where you just go, how the hell do they keep it all together, man? There's just so much going on all at one time, man.
Tony Mazzaro yesterday at 98.5thesportshub.com. Celebrate Tom Brady as much as you would like today, Patriots fans. But let's be honest, Brady wasn't good on Sunday night in Super Bowl 53. And the truth is, he played one of his worst postseason games of his illustrious career. Brady went 21 of 35, a measly 60% for a pedestrian 260 yards. No touchdowns and one interception on his first pass in the Patriots' 13-3 victory over the Los Angeles Rams. One of just three career postseason games in which Brady finished with a rating under 75 and zero touchdown passes. Know what Brady's record is in those games? A perfect 3-0, which means the coach covered his ass. That's Tony Maz's take. To summarize it, read the entire story at 98.5thesportshub.com because it goes on to say that Brady is covered for his performance by the performance of Bill Belichick and his coaching in this game. I've got a few issues with the take, but this is what I would say. If you flip the quarterbacks on Sunday night, who wins the game?
Wow. Ooh. If you flip the quarterbacks, who wins the game?
Congratulations,
the Rams,
LA Rams.
The Rams win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. The Rams win the game.
Yes. Yeah.
If even if Brady gave you the type of performance or was just not great but was okay the way he was Sunday night, are you telling me that Tom Brady lollipops that throw to Stephon Gilmore?
No. You're right. Yeah,
are you
right.
telling me that he throws his big looping pass to the end zone when Brandon Cooks is wide open? No. No, they win the game.
Yeah, they do win the game. Look, that I think that's a little unfair, right? I mean, that's an unfair kind of, I think, portrayal of Tom. I mean, look, the stat. You can look at stats, okay, all you want, but Tom, and even though he had maybe a rough first half, he made the plays at the end of the game where the other guy couldn't, right? I mean, the other guy couldn't, and Tom did.
I would say that if you flip the quarterbacks, L.A. wins, and therefore that sort of handles both sides of that. Jared Goff, I know that the Rams have had a good year. They have. And if they were completely healthy, you might be looking at a different game. If Cooper Kupp is healthy and they've got him, if Todd Gurley is at 100%, you might be looking at a different game. But just in what they had available, you flip quarterbacks, the Rams would have won the game. And that in and of itself should stand for something for Tom Brady's performance on Sunday night.
That's true. That's a good point.
Was he perfect? No. Far from it. He had issues. He had some bad throws. He had some really bad throws in the game. I particularly enjoyed when he threw it to James White and threw it directly into the turf in front of his feet.
Yeah.
That was like, whoa, what happened there?
That was the that was the one throw where I was like, wait, what is going on here? Is this how it's going to go all day?
Yes.
Because it just, I mean, it's a little dump off screen pass. So right at his feet.
Was he Tom Brady-like? No, he wasn't, and we can all admit that. It was not one of his better postseason games. Sure, statistically it tells you it's in the bottom three, but he made plays at the end. Is Jared Goff making the throw to Rob Gronkowski that Tom Brady made on the final drive?
No.
Either one of the throws that he made to Rob Gronkowski on the final drive. No, Jared Goff's not making those throws.
Yeah, I mean, Jared
Tom Brady
Goff,
is.
You heard Tony Romo on the broadcast talking about, like, oh, this is not what the Rams want to do. They don't want to drop back and throw the ball. Wait, what? It's like, are you kidding me? Their game is run and play action. Oh, you got Jared Goff dropping back into pass coverage. You don't want to have him asking him to do that too much. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, that just showed you right there that this kid wasn't ready for prime time.
My other take on this is that, okay, so Bill Belichick, if he game plans, and defensively the Patriots did game plan very well with both their coaches, both Bill Belichick and Brian Flores. Mm-hmm. Great. They get all the credit for that. Yes. Does Bill Belichick, the GM, get any blame for what Brady lacked within his offense this year? Because he should. He should get blame. All I could think about in that game on Sunday was, if the Patriots could truly stretch the field right now, how much better off they would be offensively. If they just had one guy who was a legitimate threat down the field, and they were trying their their hardest to try and establish that Chris Hogan could catch the ball down the field. That's what those six
against Marcus Peters.
That's what those six attempts were all about. They were trying to prove that they could hit one down the field, and they couldn't. They had no shot of doing it because they didn't have the horses to do it. And so if they had one of those guys, and I know most people would say if Josh Gordon were healthy, and I would say no, I'm talking about someone who's actually the threat. And I know that Gordon is the threat, and a lot of teams have respected him. We saw that all year long. Josh Gordon got more respect and more coverage than he probably deserved at times.
I'd say so.
Which was fine. Like, that helps. But what if they had an actual guy who was a legitimate every single play you had to worry about him down the field? What if they had just one of those guys? How different would that offense look on Sunday night? Because Bill Belichick recognized that need. That's why he went out and got Josh Gordon. That's why he made that move. But if it had been a more complete move, if it had been thought of last offseason and it was truly addressed then instead of the Jordan Matthews of the world, you might have a completely different game. And Bill Belichick doesn't need to be the hero on Sunday night for the game plan aspect of the Patriots winning the game.
Right.
I love defense. I love that they improved as the season went on. I love that they played their best game of the year and the most important game of the year. But let's not turn that into thank God they did because Tom Brady was so horrible. You know,
yeah,
I don't think it's fair.
I don't think it's fair either. I think it's a reach, and I agree with you. I don't think it's fair. That's an interesting kind of thing you're bringing up when you talk about the offense and how it was structured and Bill not doing enough to maybe, you know, bring in better players or at least just betting on the wrong players. But yet he's being touted as maybe this being his best coaching job ever. And I'm sitting here, I'm going, all right, best coaching job ever. Now, he's the one that benched Malcolm Butler. I think that was a big reason they lost the game last year. There's a dark cloud over this team all season long because I think of the Super Bowl loss, the hangover. Guys didn't show up for OTAs. They won 11 games this year. They were sleepwalking through most of the season. And Bill didn't give him the weapons that he wanted. And now, all of a sudden, when they win the whole thing, it's the greatest coaching job ever. And I'm like, well, Bill kind of was the one responsible for a lot of maybe the personnel decisions that, you know, help, you know, kind of hurt this team for maybe having a better regular season. Does that make sense? And now he's getting praised for doing a great job. It's like, well, I guess.
Right. But where was the coaching in against Pittsburgh?
Right.
Or that maybe not be the
or
best
Miami.
Example. Let's say Miami. Where was the coaching against Miami?
Yeah.
Or Tennessee?
Yeah.
Or Detroit, for that matter.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's there's so much excitement because the expectations were lowered for this team. And that's a product of what the team did. That's a product of what the coaches did in
that's
the regular
season.
That's
my whole point I'm trying to make.
Right?
Yeah. That's why I'm kind of like, yeah, it was a great coaching job. But to win the whole thing, it takes great coaching to win the whole thing. But a lot of the problems they had that were kind of self-induced, you know, where I feel like Bill could have done more to help the situation. And I also say that, and I don't want to take anything away because this it's a phenomenal effort, particularly the defense. But things kind of lined up well, I thought, for them, Beetle. You know, playing two cupcakes at home, you know, it's kind of one of those deals where they found their mojo. And I know a lot of people point to the Chargers game as, wow, that this team really has turned it around, and they really proved a lot to everybody. Well, I almost feel like the Chargers came in here just like wounded, and really all those external factors, having to go from the East Coast or West Coast to the East Coast twice in 2 weeks, playing the Baltimore Ravens in the wild card, it was set up for the Patriots to feast on them.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
What's going on?
Zolak and Bertrand continues.
Hey.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub. Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Got a tweet. Somebody's upset with us, or probably me, for saying one particular thing.
Yeah, it's more you than me.
It's more.
It's not Ted. Everybody loves Ted.
It's more me. Joe Siders.
Just wait. I'll say something to screw it up.
Tweeting in. He's the drummer for New Pornographers. I had a friend who texted me while we were down at the Super Bowl party and said, "Are you like friends with this guy? How do you know him?" I'm like, oh, he listens to the show. He's like, you get on Instagram and I follow you, and then I see a drummer from a band that I like being like, great to have you on Instagram. And I'm like, what the hell is this? I said, well, there you go.
Yeah, like Twitter friends.
Now you know.
Yeah.
Now you know. He tweets in, why are we bleeping, we'll say poo-pooing, on the city of L.A. today? For a place everyone claims is fake, we sure didn't jump on any bandwagon. Spare me the L.A. sucks talk.
So if there were a bunch of L.A. Rams fans there saying, go L.A., go L.A., all these L.A. people, knowing us, that's exactly what we would be doing.
Rip them to shreds and say they're a bunch of fraud Johnny-come-lately fans.
You can't win, L.A. Rams. Not, I would say minimum 5 years. If you show up at a Super Bowl
either
5 years from now, well, I think we'll probably be somewhat okay with it. But had they shown up this year, no, either way, you're going to get ripped for it. You're going to be ripped for not being there. You would have been ripped for being there.
Doesn't either one make them a bad sports town? They've always been a bad sports town. It's why the NFL left and left you high and dry without a team for so long.
It's
a town about the scene. You know, like the Lakers games are all about the scene. You know, it's not about the actual game, and I'm sure there are real L.A. Lakers fans, but like the Kings games, oh, it's such a scene, man. You got to go to the L.A. Kings because you know who else is going to be there.
Yeah.
Is there a real importance on sports there in L.A.?
No, I don't think so.
Like, you could name 100 other things that are more important in L.A. than sports, and that's why here in Boston, it's like number one on the list, and therefore we look at you and say, you suck.
Sports, politics, and revenge. Those are the three things.
Yes.
I don't know what the attendance numbers were for the Rams this year, but I mean, the Coliseum. I saw it filled up for that divisional round against
with
the Cowboys.
Visiting fans from other teams.
That's pretty much what it was, right?
Yeah, great place to visit.
Yeah. It's not their fault of the people in L.A. I mean, there's a lot going on there. There's a lot to think.
Well, we're not saying L.A. sucks as a place in general. A sports town, place sucks. Yeah.
Well, that's
a sports town.
That's why San Diego's an awful sports town. Like, I wouldn't be sitting inside watching sports if I lived in San Diego.
True.
So it's not really their fault.
No, there's a reason why it's a bad sports
town.
And
we'd probably all be much nicer people if we all lived in San Diego.
Oh.
Right?
I know people live in San Diego.
That's true.
Wonderful people.
I grew up in San Diego. I went to high school in San Diego. It's hard to really, not too many a-holes. I mean, there's nothing really to, when you look around.
What's there to be mad about?
What do I got to be mad about?
78 and sunny every day.
Pretty much. And the sunsets every night are beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
Got the beach.
Did you surf? Did you surf when you lived there, Ted?
You know, Hardy, I surfed before I ever played football. I was on the surf team. True story. No, I'm not even kidding. I was a surfer. Yeah.
Wait,
I got pictures to
prove
it.
High school surf team?
We put out more pro surfers than we do pro football players. Yeah, Taylor Knox for Carlsbad High School. We have an elite surf team. I took a surf class my senior year. The class started at Tamarack Beach. It was awesome, man. I'm not making this up, man. So I surfed before I ever played football. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Not even joking, man.
Size board did
my
you
first
use?
Board was a rusty surfboard. It was 6 feet tall. So I went with the shorter boards. When you get older, at my size, I got pictures. I'll show you later. I longboard when I go back. I was the first guy from Carlsbad High School to ever make it to the NFL. I'm proud to say that. We've had, I think, 7 or 8 since. But, man, I was on the surf team and loved it. Absolutely loved it. Early on.
Did you ever see any sharks?
I saw schools of dolphins. Big, you know, dolphins that would swim under you. Oh my gosh! Yeah. There's something about just being out there, sitting on the board, you know, just staring out into that ocean. It was awesome. It's a strong culture. So in Southern California, it's very cliquey, right?
Right.
So jocks don't hang out with surfers, and surfers don't hang out with jocks. Those are two completely separate things. And so I had to make a choice.
I thought you were going to tell us a great story about how you united the two groups.
Well, I did to some degree. I did to some degree because I started out as a surfer, then I went to football. But all the surfer guys, all my surfing buddies, they were still boys with me, even though I was a football player.
You know what Ted is? He's a reverse Johnny Utah. Johnny Utah was the Ohio State quarterback,
right.
Became the FBI agent surfer. You went from being a surfer to a football player.
True, yeah, true story.
He's a reverse Keanu Reeves.
We call that the reverse Utah.
I loved it, boys. I mean, I wasn't very good when I was on the team. I got second place in the heat once solely because I had the balls to swim out past the shore break, and it was a big walled-out day.
You swim out past the breakers, watch the world die is what you're doing.
Yeah, that's what I was doing, buddy. Okay. And so it was just like 10-foot waves all walled. Boom! There was no barrel. There was no tubes. It was not the best day for surfing. So what most people were doing was surfing the whitewash. Right? And so they were just trying to get points by surfing whitewash. No. I'm going to go out past the whitewash, past the break, and I'm going to sit out there and I'm going to wait for my perfect wave.
Wait for your set.
Wait for my set, bro. And here comes this set. And we're literally, it took me, there's like the heats are like 15 minutes long. All right. And I was, it took me all of like 11 minutes just to get past the break because it was so heavy. The waves were so heavy. So I literally got three or four minutes.
Duck diving to get through?
So much duck diving. Oh, my gosh.
I took a surf class.
You duck dive.
Ted and I, you know what, Beetle? You might want to tap out for this segment.
Yeah, sure.
Ted and I are going to do some surf talk.
So you duck dive, and right as you come up, here comes another wave. And then you duck dive. And here comes, and then you're trying to just inch your way out there. And it's tough, man. But I did it. And I got out there. And here comes my set. Here it comes. I'm going, and I'm at the top of this wave. I'm at the top of this thing, and I pull out. Whoa, no. I didn't feel good about it, so I wait for the second one. Here comes the second monster wave. I mean, time is running out in this heat. And I'm just like, I got to do it. So I get up. Here it comes. I'm at the top. I mean, you're literally, it feels like you're two stories up when it's like a 12-foot wave. I go straight down. I come off the board, fly down. Wave comes up, and I am, like, underwater for what seems like forever. I mean, I am. I'm just like, oh, my gosh. I'm trying to come up, and I can't. The pressure of the water is keeping me down. I come up, and I get my board, and I look at the beach. The horn goes off, but everyone's on the beach watching. Standing ovation. Standing ovation. I got second place.
Because you rode that wall.
Because I tried to catch a wave out there when no one else would. So they gave me second place. That's the best I ever finished, man.
You didn't get labeled being a Barney as a guy from Texas. That's more surf talk. You know, mainlanders, guys, you know, living the plains, coming to the shore.
That's true. That's true, man. Yeah, so that's what I did.
Or a Howley. Not
Howley.
Very nice.
Yeah, Howley's.
Howley's, that's even
you
worse.
You go to Hawaii, you get called a Howley.
As well, you should.
you go to Hawaii, and you go out there, and surfing's very territorial. That's the one thing I learned early on. Like, I mean, when I was the new guy, and so we're all sitting out here trying to catch our waves, and the new guy, it's like they cut you off. I mean, you get on a wave, here comes another, you know, a local who that's his break, you know, and they look at you like, dude, get out of here. We don't want you here. And so it was hard to break into that surfing culture. And then once I did, that's right kind of when I decided, you know, I'm going to play football. So. And I always wanted to go. I always liked when I put some size on, got a little bit bigger. When I'd go back out in my later years when I was a senior, no one messed with me. Nobody's cut me off. Nobody was trying to, you know, snake my wave. Those snakes out there.
Oh,
huh?
We can talk about this all day. That's a shame we got a break.
We digress.
Without Zolak and Bertrand, your workday is just pushing papers and eating lunch.
What, is there a problem?
With Zolak and Bertrand, it's pushing papers, eating lunch, and talking sports.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Way better. Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So close. You know what? You know what? You know what the problem is, Jim? All Everclear songs sound vaguely familiar from a certain era on. Everything after Heroin Girl. This sounds just like... There you go. Here is the money that I owe you. I am still living with your gold. Yeah, so you can pay the bills. You can save one over the other. I don't want to be your... So this was the song at the Paradise that night.
Oh
yeah,
we're going back in time already.
This was the one.
I mean, brought up because Ted Johnson, we learned, is a surfer, but has double meaning in this studio.
Yes, it does.
On the midday show, the infamous Paradise incident.
That event was brought up when we had Meathead Radio, when it was Beetle, you were out. It was New Year's Eve day.
Yeah, Monday.
And we brought that up, and it was interesting to talk about. After that event, we played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Tampa, and didn't go so well. I think that concert was on a Thursday night, and we went down to Tampa Bay to play the Buccaneers, and they had the two-headed monster running backs. You had Mike Allstott.
And Dunn? Who was it?
Is it Warwick Dunn?
Was it Warwick Dunn then?
Might have been, yeah. And we went down there, and I asked Jim was there, and I said, Jim, tell me what the time of possession was for that game in Tampa Bay, because all I remember is there was all this, you know, talk about, oh, you know, you had a lot of guys from the Patriots out partying at an Everclear concert, and they had this incident, and they're not focused, and they're not ready to go, and Pete Carroll was our coach at the time, and I just remember, like, we go down there, and it was three and out for our offense pretty much the whole day. Just felt like, and Mike Allstott and Warwick Dunn, I just felt like they were averaging, you know, just like 4.1 per every. I was done at halftime. Like, give me IVs in each arm, please, because I can't take. I mean, this is one of the most physical games. It was so hot, so humid. And I just thinking, I'm looking over at the bench, and I'm looking at our quarterbacks at the time. I'm like, hope you guys had fun. Hope you guys had fun at that event, because I think the time of possession was ridiculous. It was like 39-28
for Tampa Bay and 20-32 for New England.
I hope it was worth it, boys. I hope you guys had fun at that Everclear concert.
And from what I can tell here, there were only 39 rushing attempts by Tampa Bay Bucs.
That was it?
Just 39.
I remember that correctly.
You didn't have a busy day or anything. 39 runs.
Wow. And I will say this about Mike Allstott. That dude was 10 times better rusher than he was fullback. You go in there to hit him as a fullback, it was pillow fight. Trying to tackle that song gun in the open field, he had a real low lean when he'd run. Oh, so hard to bring down. So thank you, boys. Thank you. Hope you all had fun at the Everclear concert.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm not bitter.
Yeah, we were going over Bledsoe's box score that day. 13 of 25, 117, two interceptions. He was sacked 5 times. So Zoe actually came into the game, and Zoe said, I'm not going in the game. Or did he say, he told a story about that. He's like, he didn't want to go in the game.
Oh, my God.
He said he came in and threw a touchdown.
Quarterback rating for Bledsoe, 31.6.
Sacked 5 times
and threw 2 picks.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, yeah, you guys bring that that event up. It has a different meaning to me.
Yeah.
I just remember being
Why didn't you roll out when you saw him coming? It hurts my head to move. I was going to roll out of the pocket, but I was going to throw up.
Adam's in Lowell. Hey, Adam.
Hey, guys. I knew that I was actually in Atlanta. I went to the game. I knew the disparity would be a lot more Pats fans, but when Brady had the ball, you could hear a pin drop. When Goff broke the huddle, the place would just erupt. So, you know, I don't think you heard half what McVay said. And on top of that, you'd think the most sought-after jersey, you'd think the most jersey you'd see of Rams fans there would be like Goff or Gurley or Aaron Donald. Nope. Jack Youngblood jerseys everywhere. That's it. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
True. All true. A lot of Jack Youngblood being represented there.
Beetle, was Jack at Radio Row? Because he usually will make an appearance. He's one of the most interesting interviews you'll ever have.
I don't remember seeing him there.
I interviewed him
there. I have no idea.
Yeah, he's quite the character.
Jim, did you see him there?
No, I did see a lot of jerseys, but I didn't see him there, though.
Yeah, I didn't see him.
He's a character, man.
I saw Youngblood jerseys, and I saw Dickerson jerseys. Those are the two jerseys I saw.
That's kind of interesting.
No current players.
No, but I mean, so when you think of the Rams, don't you think Kurt Warner? Don't you think Marshall Faulk?
No, those are St. Louis
but
Rams.
But those are St. Louis Rams. So I guess the LA crowd only wants to go back to the old LA guys.
Okay. You're totally, that makes sense.
But to me, it's all the same thing. You've been a football team in a crappy market for your entire existence, always. So you can have whoever you want. Yeah. Celebrate Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, whoever it is you want to talk about.
Ted, you had 13 tackles in that game, by the way, that Tampa game.
13.
8 in the first half, which is probably why you retired.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was done, Jim. After, I was like, please, somebody, for the love of God, get me out of this game, man. 13 tackles.
Was it hot that day?
Oh, it was a little. Yeah, it's really hot. It's really humid. And I remember, I'm literally like, here come the offense coming off the field after going 3 and out again. Just looking at him like, thanks, boys. I appreciate that. Oh. Let's just keep sitting Mike Allstott at the, you know, at those linebackers all day. That was a lot of fun.
Good thing you had that strong disciplinarian of a head coach, Pete Carroll.
Oh, yeah.
He really probably set them straight. Steve is in Billerica. Hi, Steve.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Pat, I have two comments for you. Going into championship weekend, the quarterback dome was up for grabs by the four quarterbacks, and Brady shut the door on the two young guys. What does that do to them in their future and where they stand? What's going to happen with the two, you know, the two young bloods, mm-hmm. right? And the second thing is the success of the team is one thing, but I feel that the quarterback play dictates all the wins and losses. I feel that if the Rams scored 14, I feel that Brady would have put up 20. And if the Rams scored 21, Brady would have got the 28. I just feel the success of the team is, it's on the coach overall, but wins and losses are decided by the quarterback play. Individually, all the wins and losses are decided by the quarterback play.
Well, you can spin it always that way, Steve. In this game, you could say you had two great defensive performances. Whoever was going to have a better night as a quarterback, their team would probably edge out the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Goff was definitely not the better quarterback in the game. Brady was.
It wasn't even close. I mean, even though that wasn't Tom's best game, Jared Goff was bad. I mean, he was bad. I mean, he made a few plays, but for the most part, the kid was overwhelmed. To answer your first question, don't you think, I kind of always love it, when Tom goes up against quarterbacks, young quarterbacks that have a ton of hype around them, and it's all this kind of, this is the kind of new gun on the street, that he always shuts them down. I mean, I love when I see, you know, Andrew Luck come into Gillette Stadium and then just get, you know, beat down. Tim Tebow coming in July, get beat down. So I just think he's the professor. They're the students, and they're just not. They're not going to be on his level for a long time. I mean, he's at a different level. So those guys, I think a lot of times teams, maybe players, but teams collectively, coaches, sometimes when they lose to the Patriots, sometimes it's just like they don't recover for a while.
Right.
You know, I mean, you see. They get beat by the Patriots, and a lot of times you see it in the season. I've seen it time and time again where a team will come in, play the Patriots, get embarrassed, and then the rest of their season sucks. That happens, I feel, a lot.
Yeah, it's like a wake-up call. It's like, you know, you're rolling along, and then...
You think you're doing good? I think we got all worked out?
Go up against a team that... It's not a question. These guys know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You think you know what you're doing. Yeah. You think you got to figure it out. You're just a team that has to figure it out.
Yeah.
We're going to get to the headlines here with Hardy. I just want to give you a parade update. David Andrews is shirtless.
Nice. Nice. That a boy.
So he's at the
comfortable
front.
In his own skin.
He's at the front of the flatbed that Rob Gronkowski has sort of run today. He's shirtless. Gronk has no shirt on but a security vest.
A yellow security vest taken
from someone. Yeah. So it's Gronk, no shirt, but with a security vest. And
he's got a bottle of red wine, it's being reported.
And then our bosses are at the back of that flatbed.
Artie? Oh, there they are.
Yeah. Our bosses are in the back.
There you go.
How about
Mike,
that?
Mary, having a good old time.
Riding on through the streets of Boston. The parade continues.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all 6 world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores.org/Noah.